Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle, as always, is with me. Today we're going to talk about two episodes of Hard Knocks, go over some preseason Bears football, probably the last snap Caleb's going to play this preseason before we get to game one, and anything else we feel like we need to talk about.
Yeah, right? the pace this time of year is somewhat furious because, you know, we did record last week, but... And we had originally talked about, oh, well, let's hop on and let's record Friday this week. But we were like, you know, if we do that by that point, it will, despite being recording in consecutive weeks, we will somehow have two episodes of Hard Knocks, two preseason games, some other stuff to cover. And I think, you know, we're probably not going to spend a whole lot of time next episode on the final preseason game where almost nobody of importance is going to play. Well, I think next week we might do our divisional previews and predictions, have a guest. I got to talk to that guest, but we'll see. But there's a lot to go over. I thought I brought up an outline to keep us on track here today, cause there's a lot to cover. Yeah. Since last we were in the studio, in the booth. Travis, when I say in the studio, does your mind go the same place? Mine goes like, do you think of that Chappelle Show sketch with, where they were doing Making the Band or whatever, and we just constantly like, that's it. I'm closing up the studio.
You always talk about that episode of Chappelle Show. I always hear Young Jeezy saying he's in the studio with Julio for some reason. Every time you're like, you in the studio? Like, yeah, with Julio.
Your task is to get me a sugar cookie.
Damn. That's, you found your taxes? Sugar cookie. Yeah. That what's good in the streets right now?
All right. So chronologically, the first thing that happened that we have not discussed yet is Hard Knocks episode 2.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, I had to really kind of rack my brain. I had to look up what a review, even though I watched it last week, what are some of the reviews of episode 2. I didn't think anything particularly noteworthy happened in episode 2. We found out there was a whole Valus Jones arc. Yeah. That's probably the most noteworthy thing, which is also corresponds to real life, obviously, that Valus Jones is now lining up at running back, trying to give him some opportunities there. Travis, how do you feel about Valus Jones and his ferrets and also Valus Jones moving to running back?
Yeah, the ferret thing kind of came to a head in episode 3, right, where he talked about the backstory of the ferret. The
demise of the ferret, yeah.
I love that story. That is the most college story I've ever heard. Me and my boy, we went on Craigslist, and this dude was breeding ferrets, and we went down an alley, and I was like, keep the car running. Like, this doesn't look legit at all. Now that I'm thinking about this, this is a horrible idea. What's wrong with me? Why did I trap myself like this?
When he's talking about it, too, and he's just like, I know he's in a bad place now.
That's right. He's in ferret heaven, dude.
Anyways, oh god, yeah. Valus Jones is a running back. I think, when did you listen? I know this is a victory for you because when was the first time you think you said Valus Jones to just line up at running back? Was it week one or week two of his rookie training camp in 2020?
It was almost instantly, right? Because at the time, what was popular was, oh my god, why do I forget his name all the time? The 49ers wide receiver,
Debo.
Debo Samuel, and they were running him, lining him up at running back and running him out of that. At the time, Debo was pissed about that. He was like, I don't like getting hit, like running backs get hit. But, it made perfect sense.
They were gonna try to argue he was a running back and pay him like a running back instead of a wide receiver.
Right. That is the issue. The thing is that Valus, his biggest strengths coming out of college were after he caught the ball, but he always caught the ball short. You had some stat at the time that was like,
it was
his catches were averaging like 2 yards beyond the line of scrimmage.
So he and talking like Malachi Corley in this year's draft, guys that I just like, I had no interest in because every touch they had was just manufactured for them. I said at the time, I was like, they were, you know, because of Bears Twitter, I can't remember who it was exactly, said Debo Light or whatever they called Valus. And I was like, I honestly think the best case scenario is more like extremely light Cordarrell Patterson. And if that's the case, let's just skip the 5 or 6 years of Cordarrell Patterson's career, where they tried to make him a wide receiver and just like, let's just move him immediately to running back. Cause I did always appreciate that about Cordarrelle Patterson, where like four different teams were like, yeah, he's so fast. He's so good with the ball in his hands. Why can't he work at wide receiver? And Bill Belichick was the first one who's been, I don't know, why don't you just make him a running back? Just give him the ball. Just, yeah. just hand him the ball and let him run. Just make him a running back.
And made all the sense in the world.
He's the GOAT.
I honestly have no idea why it took this long to try it. Maybe just the lack of wide receiver talent that the Bears have had, where they were just like, well, we need somebody to play wide receiver, right? Like, we can't be turning guys over to running back. We have too many running backs. And I think that's probably what it was. This does feel like a bit of a last gasp. I have seen some roster projections that suggest he's going to make the team, but those projections have all listed exactly five wide receivers, and I would be stunned.
Yeah.
I would be stunned.
Well, and then, God, he muffed the kick in that game.
Yet again, he can't catch kicks. You know, we have Rome Odunze back there practicing catching kicks.
I thought when this new kickoff rule was implemented, I was like, well, there's it. There's how Velus makes the roster this year. And he's not even taking advantage of it. Although, I mean, when he did catch, again, typical Velus, the few times he has managed to actually catch the ball and return it, I thought the returns have looked pretty good. But, I mean, if he, I don't have the confidence you have that he's just not making the roster. But I think if he does, like, it's still going to be, and it'll be disappointing from Ryan Poles' perspective. It's still going to be because he was a third round draft pick and not because he's earned his place on this roster. If he was a sixth round pick, I don't think we're having this conversation, but here we are.
Sure.
Anyways,
the other thing that factors into it is, do we find a suitor for Khalil Herbert, right? If somebody calls up and says fifth round pick for Khalil, you know, we need another running back. At that point, I think we feel very comfortable making the trade because whatever, you just put Velus in there. And I think you're fine with experimenting with Velus at running back for a year because he's going to be RB3. Right.
Experimenting with Velus and ferrets. And I mean, that's what college is for. That's why he was there for so long.
That's all comes back to reminding me of my college days. That's right.
So anyways, speaking of running backs also who are on the roster bubble, there was an Ian Wheeler story arc as well. How are you feeling about Ian Wheeler, Travis?
I mean, that's kind of the issue, right? Is Wheeler's looked better than Velus. Now you kind of expect that because Velus hasn't played running back before. But yeah, if you were going to keep some promising young guy with speed, it'd probably be Wheeler. I mean, but do we care? How much time do we want to spend on the goddamn running back position in the NFL? Like, we have Swift, and he's obviously way better than everybody else we have on this roster. It's not even close. So, and then we have Roshan, who is like one of the best pass blocking running backs to come out of college in a while. So why do I care? Why do I care about the third running back?
Not quite sure what's going down with Travis Homer. Like, he's still here. So, yeah, there's a lot of how they actually settle that running back room is going to be interesting to see. But no, Ian Wheeler, I mean, good story. He's going to land on the practice squad. People are always like, oh, you got to protect him. Can't let him go. I trust every single team. 99% of the time when fans are like, oh, you can't expose that guy. He ends up safely on the practice. I can't remember the last time.
Everybody has actually guys.
Can't remember the last time the Bears actually had a player that people were like, oh no, don't cut him. He won't make it to the practice squad. And they didn't make it to the practice squad. It happens every time. So, other things from Hard Knocks episode 2, you know, DJ Moore, he seems fun. I liked when he got hit and immediately got up screaming, I love football. I like football.
You know, I liked when he went to the sidelines and saw his daughter, and she was like, "What's the name of the purple bumblebee?" Yes. From If? And he was legitimately sitting there, like, "I can remember this."
Like that's if that ain't being a parent, like that's exactly what my kids would do to me. At biggest, like getting prepared for a game, called over to the sidelines, my son would have a question for me about Goku. I'd be like, "Shit, I don't know, man. I was not prepared for Goku questions right now." So
that's right. That's right. He seemed like, well, this is important. I'm going to sit here and I'm gonna think about it. Like, we can figure it out. You know, your phone doesn't work in Soldier Field. We all understand that. So, obviously, nobody could pull that up. It really wasn't that interesting of an episode. I think I'm comparing these to, like, the Jets episodes, because those are, like, maybe the last ones that I really watched.
You mean the, like, Rex Ryan Jets ones?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there. So, and actually, I guess, yeah, they were so much more compelling back then when you were allowed to, like, show roster. I will never forget, and it's the only reason I still remember this person. Well, and also because we had a really good friend who, for whatever reason, was obsessed with this guy. I still remember Kellen Clemens to this day.
Yeah.
Because of how pissed he was at the Jets for cutting him and how determined he was that they were going to rue the day they cut Kellen Clemens.
They did eternally.
Do you remember, we had a friend, or one of our friends in high school was very thought Kellen Clemens was really going to be a thing.
There was a thing about, there was an aura around Clemson at that time where they just, they had all this talent and then they would just Clemson it away randomly. And there was Clemens this attachment.
Kellen Clemens went to Oregon. You are thinking of Charlie Whitehurst.
I'm thinking of Charlie Whitehurst. Yes.
You are. Clipboard this, Jesus, as they called him. So
this was coming back around to Kellen Clemens, but our friend, our mutual acquaintance, he picked up in the same way on Oregon, who was also like,
that's right,
kind of trying to climb into that conversation at the time. And there's something about those teams where you just never forget them in your youth. Kellen Clemens, Charlie Whitehurst,
Dennis Dixon. Remembering
Dennis Dixon.
Some guys on a Bears podcast were remembering Oregon and Clemson players from the mid-aughts for some reason. Apparently, so if you haven't noticed through three episodes, nobody has launched an obscenity or an expletive on Hard Knocks so far. And we found out last night that that is because the McCaskies, God bless them, want this to be a family-friendly program. Their humble request for finally agreeing to do Hard Knocks was that they don't show none of that gosh darn swearing, which would probably explain why we have yet to see any offensive line meetings, because I've never met or known an offensive lineman or coach who can complete a sentence without dropping an F-bomb. I mean, that's why I am so laden with obscenities on this show. That's why we have an explicit tag. That's where I come from. So
I figured we were just, that's why we were avoiding Nate Davis entirely, because every frame involving Nate Davis is somebody swearing.
Yeah. The one Nate Davis related comment I have for this week's episode, or for this week, is I do wonder, Matt Eberflus said most of the Bears starters will not play versus the Chiefs. Is it the Chiefs? Are they playing the Chiefs?
Chiefs, yeah, tomorrow.
Okay. So that raises the question for me, what does most of mean there? Why not just say the starters aren't playing?
Yeah.
Is he going to send Nate Davis out there for a few snaps just to send a message? Or will he not big time him like that? What do you think? Should he big time him like that?
I don't think with Ryan Bates injured, you do that.
You're trying to put your stamp on this team. You're tired of being pushed around by the Chase Claypools of the world. Are you big-timing Nate Davis and making him go out there when all the other starters get to rest?
I wouldn't at this point, because we really can't have him pouting over the next 2 weeks if Bates is going to continue to be hurt, right? We really actually need him to play right guard.
Yeah.
So I would probably keep him out. Yeah, I'm not sure what that meant.
I did not think Nate looked good against the Bengals. I thought
he got run over.
I thought he was the obvious wink link on the offensive line against the Bengals. Because through two games, I think early concerns about the offensive line, and I mean, again, we were the ones who just like 2 weeks ago had an episode kvetching about the offensive line, seem a little overrated. Coleman Shelton's looking pretty solid at center. Braxton Jones, I think, looks like Braxton has taken a step up. I think there's a good chance he stakes his claim to being a top 10 left tackle this year. Darnell Wright looks like Darnell Wright. Tevin Jenkins, you know, last couple of years, we've had no concerns about Big Dog when he's on the field. And so far he's on the field. So really only one obvious weak link on the offensive line right now. And it was Nate Davis. I felt like it was pretty obvious against the Bengals. So
I mean, Pryor looked a hell of a lot better than him the week before, I think.
Yeah. So I don't know that. When Ryan Bates is healthy, I don't know that Nate Davis has a permanent claim to that spot. I'll say that much.
Agreed.
But yeah, I would agree with you for now. Yeah, give Nate a break and keep him healthy and keep him invested, hopefully, till week one. The only final thing I want to say about Hard Knocks episode 2 is I did enjoy the bit about Keenan Allen just desperately wanting his first catch against Jalen Johnson. I liked that back and forth. We'll talk about this here in just a second with the Bears-Bengals intra-squad practice, but like it was so many times in Bears camps of yore, we have said like, iron sharpens iron when you hear that like the defense is dominating again. But I think when you have a Jalen Johnson versus Keenan Allen, a Jalen Johnson versus DJ Moore, like that is an iron sharpens iron kind of thing. So it was kind of cool to see how seriously those guys take that kind of thing and the battle between just two pros at the, you know, and Jalen at the height of his powers right now. So that was cool. That was the last thing I thought was kind of cool from episode two. Did you have any other comments about Hard Knocks episode two?
I think I appreciated that my hypothesis about what happened on the single bad pass in the Bills game, the one where he missed Rome coming open going forward just out of the end zone instead of going to the back of the end zone. Last week, I was like, I'm pretty sure what he wanted is for him to go to that back corner, and he didn't. And they showed the second he got to the sideline, Caleb was like, whenever that happens, find the quarter. Like, just go straight to the corner of the end zone, dude.
In the Bengals game, he's right there in the corner, and Caleb makes that throw, but Rome's feet are on the back of the end zone.
We're almost there. We've almost perfected that play. Now Rome just needs to know where his feet are, right?
It's cool to see those two working that out on HBO. It's cool to see them working that out in real time. You can see that chemistry starting to develop. That's very cool to watch. So then the next thing that happened chronologically after Hard Knocks episode two, the Bears and the Bengals, they had themselves a nice little intra-squad scrimmage. It was rainy, and we'll talk about, you know, how it was covered on Hard Knocks episode three in a little bit, but just in terms of, you know, what came out of that practice last week. But the reports were that this Bears defense that's been, you know, giving Caleb Williams a hard time really gave Joe Burrow a bad fucking day. What I was told was Burrow was picked. What we were told is Burrow was picked off three times. I heard that it could have been as many as five. Had two others that just couldn't quite come down with it. But it was funny. I was watching a video clip of a Cincinnati local reporter. He was doing his little nightly, you know, Bengals clip for their local news station, and he was like, "And I doubt many Bears fans are going to find this," which is funny because that man never underestimate Bears fans. They'll find it. You're talking Bears, they'll find it. But he was like, I don't think many Bears fans will watch this, but I have to say, I was very impressed by the Bears defense. They were just not giving the Bengals anything. And he said, he's like, I could not have been more impressed with Caleb Williams. Keenan Allen and DJ Moore were giving the Bengals defensive backs fits all day. The general consensus on both sides was that the Bears certainly came out the winner of that practice, if you will. So that for me was a nice data point too, because again, we have had reports from camp about, you know, and it really hasn't been like the Mitch Trubisky death camp of 2019 where every single day it's like, I don't know, but I think there's been some anxiety from Bears fans because every day there's rarely been a day where it's like, wow, Caleb Williams just dominated start to finish at practice day. It's a lot of, some good plays for the offense, some bad plays for the offense, kind of up and down. Defense probably won the day overall. And then that's when the usual explanations come out. And they're true when you say, like, this is a defense that is in year three running the scheme that is returning nine guys from last year. The secondary has four second-round picks in it. Jalen Johnson just got a massive extension. They've added a former all-pro safety in Kevin Byard. This is a good secondary. It should be a fantastic secondary. And if they're going up against a rookie quarterback and an offense that's in the first year of install, the defense should have the advantage. And this should be a good defense. And if Matt Eberflus went out there and his defense got embarrassed in the regular season by a rookie quarterback, no matter how good that rookie quarterback is, we'd all be calling for his head, given how much has been invested in this defense. But when it's happening in practice every day, people are panicking because they want to hear every day that Caleb Williams is dominating. So it was kind of nice to have this, you know, this little heat check against the Bengals to show that, you know, Joe Burrow's having a real tough time against this defense, guys, that Caleb Williams looked pretty good against the Bengals defense. So, There's a lot of evidence to point to the fact that maybe, just maybe, this defense is really good. And this offense might be all right, too.
Yeah, I think the first thing we got out of episode 3 of Hard Knocks is Flus talking to Caleb Williams. And one of the remarks Caleb had was, like, you know what I learned from this last preseason game is practice is a lot harder than these games. And that's the thing that we've heard a lot coming out of camp is Flus is throwing everything and every kitchen sink in the house at Caleb on every play, trying to put him through like a real gauntlet here. And he's doing well enough in practice where people are coming away impressed. But yeah, the defense is getting in his face a lot as well. So yeah, to see that the Bears defense just came out and destroyed the Bengals. And then, yeah, Caleb, basically, you know, we have these intra-squad scrimmages, and we know from last year, we know from Flus, this is the thing he cares about most is this scrimmage. He doesn't care about the preseason games. It's this scrimmage that he cares about more than anything, because you have first team versus first team. Everybody's trying. Like, there's a lot of pride that goes into this. To see the Bears come out on top on both sides of the ball against a presumptive playoff team, a team with a decent defense and a better offense, and for them to just be completely shut down, that's got to be massive. I mean, we'll get into the preseason game. Preseason game ended up being Caleb kind of going through the motions against the Bengals twos, right? Like, it just wasn't a big deal. The defense was going against the twos. So their scrimmage is really, really what mattered the most. The Bears just absolutely dominated. Also, the other thing, I guess this is probably the next thing we were going to talk about. We already talked about Keenan Allen a little bit. If there's been one negative to come out of Bears camp, right, it's been these people talking about Keenan Allen losing a step, seeming like he's a bit slow, right?
I'm going to let you finish, but I don't think that's been a story out of Bears camp. That has been a story out of people watching preseason film.
Right.
And to me, I had Keenan Allen washed watch as a question mark on our little itinerary for discussion today, because JT O'Sullivan has been the big leader of this Chargers, saying he thinks Keenan looks like he's lost a step. But the Bears practice reports, and trust me, folks, one thing I feel pretty confident about with the Chicago sports media is that if there were concerns about how Keenan Allen looked in practice, they would voice them. That's never been, this is not the Washington Commanders media or the Denver Broncos media, where right now Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels and everybody else can do no wrong. And like, we know the Bears media, they're conditioned to cynicism and they love to point out where things are going wrong. You know, they've spared no expense painting maybe a more dire picture than necessary of the offensive line a couple weeks ago. So I feel like if Keenan Allen looked washed in practice, we'd be hearing that. And notably, like I said, that Bengals reporter, one of the things he said Keenan Allen and DJ Moore were giving the Bears fits. And we saw that watching Hard Knocks. There were a lot of Keenan Allen highlights in that little
montage. A lot of Keenan Allen, right? And we heard that too. We heard that too coming out of that joint practice, that Keenan Allen was wide open. He was catching everything. And then you see all these highlights on Hard Knocks. He is. He's wide open. He's catching everything. There's just no problems for him.
So again, I don't want it to sound like cope, but like you sort of wonder then, you know, is Keenan Allen going 100% in these preseason games, or is Keenan Allen trying to save his bullets for when it matters, you know? And also speed, a couple things I want to say about that. Speed has never really been an essential part of Keenan Allen's game. That's not what his, I mean, I thought watching the Chargers footage from last year, I think the guy does not exactly look like he's particularly moving at an NFL speed. And then you're like, but the fucker's open anyways. So, also I'd be a lot more concerned about these whispers too, if they hadn't also drafted Rome Odunze. Like they did not build this offense around Keenan Allen, or they didn't really build this offense around any one weapon. Like you can tell the way Poles assembled this roster, his thought process is if one of those wide receivers goes down, that's fine. We'll switch. We'll run a lot of 12 personnel. We'll have Gerald Everett and Cole Kmet out there. We'll throw to the running back. Like we're covered there. If one of those tight ends goes down, we'll run a lot more 11. We've got Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, and DJ Moore. Like we're covered there. We can do, there's a lot of different ways that we can do this. There shouldn't really be a scenario barring you know, a biblical disaster where Caleb Williams is going out there, like looking like Justin Fields a couple years ago, where he's got no weapons. So I am, as far as the Keenan Allen watch goes for me, the terror alert, I am not even to yellow. I'd say I'm at like a modest light green.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Keenan's going to be fine. Keenan's definitely a dude you can't judge until you get to the regular season. And I mean, as we've said many times before, and we're about to get into this preseason game the Bears played, the only thing you can really tell in the preseason is if somebody just sucks, right? Like, ooh, there's this consistent problem that's going on constantly. I don't think that's been the case for anybody, especially Caleb. But yeah, I mean, I feel like judging a veteran wide receiver by what they do in the preseason is one of the most insane things that you could possibly do, right? Like, the guy, like, he can tell the Bears coaching staff just doesn't really care about these preseason games. They're going through the motions. And there's just no reason for him to go out there and maybe tweak something in a meaningless game that nobody really cares about. So I am not concerned about Keenan Allen at this point. Now, Kyle, should I be concerned about the Bears dropping some three and outs against the Bengals' second string to start this preseason game? All right, is the sky falling, Kyle? Am I going to be hit by the sky?
Okay, well, my answer's in two parts, if you will. Part one, the official policy of the Skycast is yes, absolutely, the sky is always falling.
Yes, great. Wonderful.
Invest in gold, sell your children. But no, I have no concern. I watched the film, and I just thought, you know, on that first play, the little sprint. Now, look, we did do this with Luke Getsy, so I have to caution ourselves there. Where I thought Luke Getsy just wasn't putting his best stuff out there when he looked so static and vanilla in preseason sometimes. And then Luke Getsy actually ended up being pretty static and vanilla. But I'm going to say, having watched a lot of Shane Waldron the last 2 years in Seattle and watching how much, like, for instance, Seattle targeted their three wide receivers and lived in 11 personnel versus how I think like 65% of their snaps so far in the preseason for the Bears have been in 12 personnel, and something like 50% of their targets have gone to Gerald Everett or the running backs or Tyler Scott. I don't think they're putting their best stuff out there right now. The first play was a sprint left. There was only one read on the play. He threw it to Keenan. It should have been a nice little 4-yard completion. It was a little high. I would have liked to see Keenan make the throw, but not concerned there. The second play, again, I felt like it was a screen play that got blown up a little quickly. He basically just killed it, throwing it to Everett. So both of those plays, like, yeah, I mean, it sucks that they were incompletions, but there was nothing I felt Caleb should have done particularly differently that he didn't do. So no concerns there. The third down play looked like there was a little bit of miscommunication there, but the protection held. I like that. I like that Caleb didn't force the issue. So, you know, no concerns there, really. Like, I didn't feel there were only a couple plays that I initially was concerned about that I looked at. The one sack that Caleb did take, watching it on broadcast and then watching it from the top view on the All 22, I thought there was an option to hit Dante Pettis up the seam for the touchdown. And I was concerned that Caleb looked like he was looking at it and even looked like he was loading up to throw it at one point and didn't. And I was like, that's the Justin Fields. Like, why did you look at it and then not throw it? So that concerned me. But then if you watch the end zone view and if you watch from the pocket, you know, Caleb sees it. He's about to throw it. And then the guard gets pushed into him. And then he misses his window there because his vision gets cloudy. So Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer pointed out, you know, that this is a case where Caleb being, you know, a generous 6'1", I think he's probably closer to a true 6 foot versus being like a 6'5", Josh Allen might have cost him a little bit on that one. A taller quarterback might have been able to just throw over that rush anyways. But for me, that was good because I was happy to see that it was not a processing error, in my opinion. It was just, you know, the pocket got muddy on him. I do think Caleb shows great pocket movement already to begin with. I think with time, he'll learn to to anticipate that and sidestep it a little bit and get himself a throwing window, just like Drew Brees always used to do. But yeah, I mean, looking through the film, I didn't see anything. And again, there were no turnover-worthy plays.
Yep.
He did not take any. He took one sack. I still don't even think it was a particularly egregious sack, at least not compared to what we're used to around these parts the last couple years. And then, of course, you know, after that, he took over and he did a couple Caleb things, really impressive Caleb things. The PI to Scott, smart play by the defensive back. I'm glad Caleb on Hard Knocks said the same thing, too, where Cole Kmet's like, we got the flag. And Caleb was like, I know, but I wanted the damn touchdown.
Yeah.
It was a perfect. It was a dot, man. If that was
back doesn't make right on, play,
that was going to be a walk-in touchdown in stride for Tyler Scott.
You could see Tyler Scott just livid down there. Yeah. Like that was in my hands.
Yeah,
and I mean, just a great play. For, great play by the Bengals. Like that's what you have to do.
Yeah, that would have been a huge play for Tyler Scott too. I think he's needing that signature big play to really show like what he brings to the table. We keep hearing he looks good in camp. It has yet to materialize on the field, but
he's pretty far down the depth chart.
Yeah, I don't really have any. I didn't walk away with any concern. I didn't, and even watching it live, it was just kind of, yeah, there were three and outs, but they were just the kind of three and outs that just, you know, shit happens sometimes. The run game didn't get anything going, and you know that the slant to DJ, I thought the slant to DJ Moore was the right read, and I thought it was a good throw. You'd like to see DJ get a step on a backup corner there. A couple people pointed out that like Rome gets open on that play. But pre-snap to me, it looked like a pressure look. I think the Bengals ended up dropping a guy back into coverage, but at pre-snap, it looked like it was going to be cover one or cover zero even. And what they tell you to do there is, you know, if you're the quarterback pre-snap, you pick a side because you probably don't have time to look left, then look right or look right, then look left. They tell you pick a side, work that one concept. I thought it was perfectly fine to say, I've got DJ Moore one-on-one. DJ's running a slant. He's probably going to get open. Drop. And it was there. He threw a perfect ball. Shit happens. So again, they were three consecutive shit happens, three and outs. They were not false starts, fumbles, bad sacks, messy. Some of the stuff, you know, it's open, but he doesn't see it. Some of the stuff that we kind of used to see in the last couple of years around here, like I said. So no, I have no concerns there. Do you have any concerns?
Yeah, I'm glad you hit on that because it leads me into the one point I wanted to make because a lot of people very positive about Caleb's performance in this game. And there's a lot of cope, I think, from other NFC North fan bases. Like, well, he had a couple three and outs to start. Like, you can't be that impressed. Like, seems like there's a little bit of fear coming from the rest of the division, which I appreciate.
There's fear.
And what I wanted to point out is basically what you were saying. You think back to what a failed Bears drive looks like, right? Over the last 3 years and then the 3 years before that with Mitch. And it involved quarterback not knowing what he needed to do. Seemed like there was some miscommunication or something, right? Or you took a costly penalty and then the quarterback, no way he's going to dig himself out of that. Or you just, we're running like something uninspired and you just know it's never going to get a first down, or like the distribution on the play calling is bad. Okay, we did two runs and then a short pass. Like, what the hell are we doing out here? None of that is what happened in this game. You know, it was just we're running our offense and we didn't get the first down. It just didn't work on a couple of drives. It looked like professional missed possessions. Essentially, it looked like that could have been any quarterback, right? There aren't that many games in the NFL where every drive that you have ends in points. You're going to have these drives that don't end in points. You're going to have to rely on your punter, the greatest punter in the history of punting. And that's just the way it is in an NFL game. And I would rather, and I don't know if we want to talk about the other quarterbacks, the other rookie quarterbacks, but I would rather have Caleb go out there, run the full offense. Clearly he is in charge of everything and, you know, whatever, we didn't get a first down on this drive, then I would have, say, what Jaden Daniels is doing in Washington, which is, sure, you move the ball. You also did that by throwing hook route, single read things. The ball, I'm catching it and I'm releasing it, and that's it. I'm a guy who's clearly not running the offense.
It really sounds like, and just reading, Albert Breer had a good article about this too, about how the Bears have been developing Caleb and everything, and how basically they cheated during the draft process because everyone knew.
They did.
Everyone except some dumbass Bears fans on Twitter knew what was happening. And so starting all the way in like February and March, they were, you know, Shane Waldron just, oh, he just happens to have a prior relationship with Caleb's private quarterback coach. And he was like, you know, it'll be just for the goofs, just having a little silly time. What if you had Caleb run over these specific cadences, these specific formations, these specific concepts? Wouldn't that just be just for goofing? Just for shits and giggles. What if you had Caleb work on these specific things and talk about how by the time, you know, Caleb, and they use their top 30 visits where you're supposed to be finding out if you want to draft the kid. They were instead feeding him. They were just already doing QB meetings and getting. So they felt when they got
Floose,
him.
Floose is such a funny guy. He's like so honest to a fault that you remember him talking about that like 45 days before the draft. Yeah. He's like, oh, it was great to get him like the plays and so he can get to learning and get to work. Yeah. And it's like, dude, you haven't said you're picking him yet.
Yeah. And then so they said by the time Caleb got to OTAs, they were like, we didn't really feel like we had to do install like you're normally doing with a rookie quarterback at that point. So then they basically they skipped him ahead to training camp. It seems like the plan has been like, all right, can you handle the whole fucking kitchen sink, kid? Can you run the whole operation while I'm blitzing the ever loving shit out of you the entire time? Yeah. Can you do it? And so far it sounds like he's passing that test. And I thought that was the same. Yeah. Same thing. It definitely feels like with Jaden Daniels and with Bo Nix, both those coaching staffs, it's almost like a confidence building exercise. Like, we want you to get out there and you see that you can do it. Just get used to the speed of the game. Here's some manufactured completions. Here's some easy schemed up stuff. I don't really feel like the Bears are scheming up shit in these preseason games. They're like, you know what? It's third down. We're running Hank. Have fun. Yeah. You know, go make a first down.
The weird thing, the curious thing, and we don't have it on the list here, but whatever the hell Atlanta's doing with Michael Penix Jr., he's the only quarterback aside from Caleb, I feel like, this preseason, who I felt like, oh, they're just having him run the playbook.
Right.
Like he's out there playing like Michael Penix, and he's taking advantage of everything within these formations.
I feel like New England has not babied Drake May either, but it's so hard to tell with New England's offensive operation. It's so hard to tell with New England's offensive operation, too, because they don't have one. Like, there's just no talent there right now.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is you want to be, whatever it is you guys think you're doing, you're not doing it because you don't have the horses right now. I have no concerns about Caleb Williams there at all. And again, the same thing, and not to keep dumping on the previous guy, but I often felt like even when Justin Fields had one of his better games, I always felt like every time I would go look at the All 22, I would feel a little bit worse about him because you would see things he passed up, things he missed. You know, with Caleb, it's been two games, but so far, the few concerns I had live when I go and look at the film, it's very easy to be like, okay, I see why that happened. All right, I can see exactly what you're, you know, I really only had, you know, the three and outs were whatever. Like I said, he wasn't missing guys who were wide ass open downfield and settling for bad checkdowns or whatever. He just had a couple of bootlegs where there was one read, the one read wasn't open, defense sniffed it out, you know. All you can do there, like they say, don't make a bad play worse. That's all you can do there. I felt he successfully did that. And then the one play that I was concerned about was, like I said, he didn't throw the touchdown up the seam to Pettis that I would have liked to have seen him pull. But when you watch it, all 22, you watch it from his perspective. You see how the pocket got pushed in. You see how his vision got cloudy. You can see him probably think, like, if I can't see it, I don't want to just rip it down by the red zone, because last thing you want to do is turn a red zone trip into an interception. So I was okay with that. I felt better about his decision-making from there. So, yeah, I have no concerns there. The only other thing I want to talk about, two things, from this preseason game. Again, the depth in this secondary is very impressive at this point. I mean, the starting three of Tyreek and Kyler Gordon was fucking all over the place in this game. Mm-hmm. It was cool to see him get a little shout out there on Hard Knocks, you know, get his little montage. Cause I mean, this defense, when they have a healthy Kyler Gordon, when they don't, is a substantial difference because he is so key to the pressure packages that they want, the run defense. I mean, everything he does is so key to this scheme. Tyreek Stevenson, I enjoyed Tyreek Stevenson being asked the other day, like, what have you learned from a whole preseason or from a whole training camp covering DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Roman Dunze? And his response was that I'm him. So
I guess I'm the best.
I love that shit. I mean, that's what I want. Like, if a cornerback does not have delusional confidence, I don't want him. Like, yeah. That's. But even beyond those three, like, I think Jalen Jones is better than most teams are looking at cornerback 4, 5, 6. I think Terrell Smith's looked really good. Blackwell, promising. You've got Greg Stroman, I don't think is terrible. Like, there's a lot of depth in that secondary. And it, you know, you have Byard too, and you have Brisker, as much as I dump on Jaquan Brisker for being a fucking annoying, he's a starting caliber safety, no doubt. And I do think he will be stronger having, I think, a partner in Byard who exposes him a little less than Eddie did last year. You know, this defensive line is still missing one more pure pass rusher. Although, again, the Austin Booker train keeps gathering steam, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive line this game also looked pretty good. One of the things I noticed for sure was the Bengals were making it a point to double-team Trevon Dexter. They saw something in that scrimmage that they very much did not like.
Yeah,
it was almost every other play, if not more frequently, that they had two on him, and it freed up Montez Sweat and then actually Dom Robinson. I was noticing coming off the other side a lot.
Yeah, you don't want to overreact again to preseason and to the score and stuff, but I mean, it's been two games where they have just given up nothing.
Yeah.
In any, like, I mean, given up what? Did Buffalo had 6 points, 3 points? The Bengals had three, like, just absolutely smothering people. It's a deep defense. And then the last thing I want to talk about from that game is I think at this point, and maybe it never was a serious competition, it felt like a couple weeks ago, like, there was some question of whether they wanted Brett Rypien or Tyson Bagent to be QB2. It sure seems like that's Tyson's job, end of story, at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I never really had a question on that one. But yeah, I mean, he's looked really good this preseason against the third string, of course, but that's, you want to see your backup quarterback dominate the third string.
And, you know, you want to just see with Tyson, I've always been a skeptic that you can really legitimately add arm strength. But I do think he's gotten some professional quarterback. He actually said this is the first year he's worked with a professional quarterback coach all offseason. He's like, you know, I went to Shepherd. My quarterback coach was YouTube. For most of college, like, I was just working stuff by myself in a garage based on clips that I found on YouTube. But, you know, he's got a professional quarterback coach for the first time, and he's worked on these things, and he's had an NFL conditioning. And I do feel like footwork looks a lot cleaner. His base is great. I mean, he had a rep. I think it was the first touchdown throw to Pettis where JT O'Sullivan was just absolutely drooling over how immaculate his base and his footwork and timing was on the play. Just like the kind of film that QB coaches drool over. And I think, yeah, he's got some legit, you know, it's not going to be an NFL. People were joking that the Giants should just trade for Tyson Bagent, given how bad Daniel Jones has looked, or the Raiders should do that. I don't think he's ever going to be an NFL, like a plus NFL starter. I don't think he's even got an average starter arm, but I do think he's now got an average backup arm. And, you know, you feel pretty comfortable with him coming in a couple, like Matt Ryan said on Hard Knocks, you feel pretty comfortable. He's a guy, if you need to play him for 2 weeks, you're going to get a pretty good effort out of him. So,
yeah, an incredibly cheap quarterback. Great find by Poles because, yeah, he's going to have to play a couple games. You just know it. Like, your quarterback's going to get dinged up. Maybe you want to rest them before the bye week. Whatever it is, that happens. And I feel good having Bagent in there for a game, especially with this defense. Like, do I think Bagent can get me 20 points? Absolutely. And that's probably enough against a weak NFL team against this defense. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Before we just talk about Hard Knocks episode 3, which is mostly covered a lot of the stuff we've already talked about, but we want to talk about the Matthew Judon trade that never was. Travis, how did you feel about hearing that the Bears came so close yet so far from trading Matthew Judon? How did you feel watching that trade almost happen on Hard Knocks?
Kind of interesting. Definitely interesting watching it. When we were talking about it maybe being Judon, I was a little like, it depends on what we're going to give up. Like, I thought, well, if it's a 4th-round pick, like, maybe that's okay because I assume we're going to sign him to a contract. The problem is he's getting old. He's going to turn 32 during this year. And it's just like,
yeah, I don't know that there's ever a scenario in which I would have been real happy about giving up a four or about giving up a three for Judon. But I could have made myself live with it if they had signed him to an actual contract extension, which obviously I'm glad to see that Poles felt the same way. Like, he was not going to give up. Because what's weird is Brad Biggs kind of reported the opposite last week, that he was saying that the Bears wanted Judon, the Bears turned the deal down because they didn't want to extend Judon. They wanted Judon to be willing to play on his current contract. And I was like, that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
That's not how Poles has ever operated.
That's where I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And so to watch Hard Knocks, that was where I was like, yes, that's more the Ryan Poles I've come to expect. Yep. Where he said, literally wrote language into the deal saying he reverts back to New England if the contract is not agreed upon.
Yeah. Judon's comments surprise me here. They're literally the polar opposite of what Hassan Reddick has been saying. The problem I'm having with this is that Hassan has been proven correct in that he's like, I have seen that the market for guys like me is to just keep trying to pay us 1 year at a time until we're broken and not give us any guarantees, essentially. So I want my fully guaranteed money. Judon, if the Bears are offering you what was probably, what, $20 million a year, I'm going to guess, like, we don't know what the details of the contract were, but it was probably fairly lucrative. My dude, you have got to take that at your age. Like, to me, that's almost an insane thing for the Bears to offer. 2 full years of guaranteed money after this year. Like, what? How could you turn that down? Given that last year he was on a downtick, Matthew Judon. He's coming off an injury. He's coming off a bicep injury. Like, I am stunned that this guy's betting on himself. It doesn't matter how well you play, Matt. Like, what Hassan Reddick has proven is it doesn't matter. People don't want to pay you. They don't want to guarantee you this money. The Danell Hunter contract is rare. Very rare at this point for a guy like Danell. We'll see how this works out for him, but this feels a lot like the Dennis Schroeder deal, where Dennis had a chance to take a bunch of guaranteed money and he was like, no, I'm gonna bet on myself, and then he just ended up playing on a series of one-year deals for multiple years and getting dunked on Reddit. I don't understand the headspace that Judon is in, where he's just like, no, I want the team that won't sign me to a contract. I want to go into free agency next year. Like, dude, there are going to be guys in free agency next year who are better than you. And when it falls to you, you're going to be sitting there like Yannick Ngakoue. You're going to have a bunch of people calling you right before the season starts. Like, 1 year, $9 million, take it or leave it. That's my fear for him. So I'm baffled at the way he played it, but it's fine for me because we didn't give up a third for that guy.
Yeah. For me also, I enjoyed seeing, 'cause, I mean, we've had this perception that Ryan Poles is a fairly analytically minded general manager. He's made a lot of comments about, like, positional value in the draft and things like that. And most of the stuff he's pointed to, you know, shows he does place some value on analytics, but I've always kind of curious, like, what metrics does he value? 'Cause, you know, last year, do you remember the analytics cone, the analytics cylinder?
The
bucket of pure unmitigated analytics. People were making fun of that, but that one was like, that was like an athletic analytics thing. Like, they were completing a score out of, like, guys, like, athletic attributes. And I was like, that to me, like, that's a kind of analytics, but that's not the kind of analytics I'm interested in. Like, I want to know, what are the, like, on-field metrics that you are using to fuel your decision-making? So I thought it was interesting to hear him literally use, like, wins above average or wins above replacement to try to pit, or wins added to try to pitch or to try to explain why they wanted Judon to Warren, which was really cool to see. Like, yes, the Bears do have a general manager who's actually committed to using analytics to help guide his decision making. I also like that he was specifically saying, like, he is 32, but he's coming off an injury, but it's a bicep injury. It's not a lower body injury. We don't believe this will affect his explosion or anything like that, which is important for a pass rusher, and to argue, you know, basically with some sound reasoning why they think he'll age acceptably for this contract. Mm-hmm. Even though it didn't go through, I did think, and even though the three was still a little too high for me, it was cool to see that the process Ryan Poles had behind that, and I feel pretty comfortable about how he's making decisions right now.
I feel it sounds like Cope because we didn't get him, but I mean, you can attest to this. Judon was not my first choice here for an edge rusher. I really feel like this is a good thing that we did not have to give up a three to pay a dude like Judon for a couple years here. Not the dude. I don't think that's the final piece that we want. And I also see the other side, which is what Poles was saying. Like, I'm not giving up a three for a rental. This isn't the year for that.
Right. Yeah.
Right? No, we don't need a rental right now.
It makes more sense for the Falcons in the position they're in to be willing to live with that deal if it's a rental because they've got, 36-year-old Kirk. But also a good place if you're the Falcons where you could have found a pass rusher during an all-in season would have been with the eighth overall pick, some might have said.
Yeah.
That's a thing you could have done. But yeah, no, that was cool.
Makes a lot more fucking sense for the Bears to get a guy who really wants a long-term deal. A guy who maybe doesn't want to play for his current team and who's also 2 years younger than Matthew Judon. If that guy were available, wake the fuck up, New York. Like, just take the three that we were going to give up for Judon. Recoup your losses.
I would make that deal. I don't know if Ryan Poles would make that deal because I do wonder if they see Reddick as a fit for their... I think they liked Judon because Judon is 260 pounds and he can play with his hand in the dirt as a true edge in a 4-3. Right. I don't think they feel that way about Reddick necessarily. So that's where I think maybe they wouldn't just turn around and make the same deal they were trying to make for Judon for Reddick. That was cool to see on Hard Knocks. Other things that were very cool to see on Hard Knocks this week, I really liked... I mean, obviously, everything of the Bears-Bengals scrimmage was just cool to see. Looked exciting. I liked the defense getting chirpy. I liked Jalen Johnson really talking some shit and backing it up, I liked to see... I got nervous, even though I know they got through it. Okay, I got nervous seeing Rome Odunze catch a beautiful ball up the sideline and then slip and fall on the goddamn wet turf. Like... Even though I knew he must have been okay, my heart still sank for a second there. Like, oh, God, there goes the ninth overall pick. But no, it was cool. Or 10th overall. Was he the ninth overall? Yeah, he was the ninth overall pick. So that was cool to see. Tory Taylor hates fun, Travis. Why does he...
Why did he
let us call him the crocodile punter?
You'll notice I've never referred to him as the crocodile punter because I knew that he didn't like that. Because Torrey doesn't talk that much. He didn't talk that much when he was at Iowa, but when he did, he always had an aversion to being defined by Australia. And as you learned in this episode of Hard Knocks, he was having a very bad time in Australia at the time. He was not pleased with his lot in life, and I don't think he was pleased with his surroundings and the NFL program that was essentially like, hey, let's train some of these rugby kickers because we're doing so many rugby style punts. Let's try to get some of them over to America. It's this program that Kirk Ferentz loves so much. He keeps pulling dudes out of there. And he really saw that as like his ticket out of Australia. So to be defined by how Australian you are, when really what you did here was escape to America, is not great. So I knew he didn't like when people were just like, he's Australian. But he's always been a quiet dude. He's just so happy to be here. He's just been happy to be in America and punt the ball. And he's just a very quiet guy. So I'm not surprised that people were trying to give him a nickname. And he's like, well, I would really appreciate not being called Crocodile Punter. That would be great. I saw that coming because I was like, yeah, this dude, like the few times I've heard him talk, it's like, ooh, those shirts at Ray Gun sure are not something that I love. I'm glad they gave him some shine. The only thing that irritates me, because I am a punting enthusiast, is they keep talking about how big of a leg he has, and I'm like, that's not even the point. The point is the dude nails everything within the 10-yard line.
It's the placement.
Yeah,
it was cool to watch how Caleb just views Torrey as an extension of the offense. I think it's great that Caleb is already a little bit in that mentality of like, don't force it. You don't have to do everything by yourself. This isn't USC. You know what? Sure, it's the 14-yard line, but Torrey's going to flip field position immediately, and we'll be fine. And that's exactly what happened. Like, every time they had to turn it over to Torrey. He pinned the Bengals back in a terrible field position situation. The Bears got the ball right back, and eventually they broke through. So it was cool. I do a little worry that might make Flew somewhat conservative on some of his fourth down decisions a little bit more than he has been, because he has that club in his bag. But it was cool to see, like, Caleb recognize the value of Torrey Taylor already.
Yeah, I mean, you saw Cole Kmet talking to Gerald Everett just being like, holy shit. Like, that's so awesome. It makes me feel so much better, you know, about, like, just putting the ball away because, you know, they're not going to do anything with this possession. Yeah. And it is going to take hold, man, because it's really not it's when people talk about him being the best player on Iowa for the last 3 years, they're not reaching for that at all. He really was the Iowa Hawkeyes. He was the reason we were getting 9 and 10 wins despite having the worst offense in the league. And it's only going to take a couple games before everybody's like, holy shit, our punter is a weapon. And he is. I can't wait. I can't wait, man. Like, every time he punts, someone new is like, whoa, like, weren't we just screwed? Like, how are we in control again of this game?
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's nice to hear from Torrey, man. I will say the thing I don't like about Hard Knocks is they keep focusing on guys I know the Bears are going to cut. And that's just kind of irritating to me because it feels like they're building them up like they have a chance. Like Austin Reed, we all know that guy doesn't have a chance. Like, why are we doing this?
Yeah. Even if the Bears were keeping three quarterbacks, and I don't think they are, I don't think he'd be the third quarterback that they pick. So,
right. I mean, well, there's that rule where Rippon can be on the sidelines, right? In case. Now, because the Broncos met with that horrible disaster where they had no quarterbacks in the game. But yeah, that's a dude who's usually going to be on the practice squad. We know Austin Reed isn't making this team. He has zero chance. Why are we showing his parents? Like, why are we going through this? Like, we know he's going to get cut.
Speaking of showing the parents, what did you think of Big Daddy Bajent?
Yeah, I mean, just an excited dad. Obviously, he's an athlete. I think that counts for arm wrestling. Like, he's a really powerful arm wrestler. Like, he's one of the dudes who I have seen in those montages on YouTube. He's not, like, the most famous arm wrestler, but he's pretty famous.
He has the personality of a famous arm wrestler, I'll say that much. Like, that,
they are all that way.
That man has been asked to leave a Chili's before, like, without question. He has ruined a Thanksgiving or two in his day. I'm glad the camera cut away very quickly after you started talking about how hot the players' girlfriends are. Like, they knew something stupid was coming there. But yeah, I thought the Tyson Bajent spotlight actually was kind of nice beyond just his dad. I thought cool to see people talking about how Tyson has developed. Tyson talking about his confidence and how things are easier for him in year two. I also thought it was cool to see him say, you know, and he said it, and like, him and Caleb seem to have a very good working relationship. They seem to be friends. But I also enjoyed Tyson saying, like, I'm not, like, I still have goals for myself. Mm-hmm. As, like, I intend to start again. I mean, basically saying, I intend to start again in the NFL. It's probably not going to be here. Yeah. But I still have goals for myself. I need to go out there in preseason when I have my opportunities. And I've got to really show what I can do because, you know, I'm not content. You know, I'm not content to just be a backup forever now. And I, you know, I almost would have laughed at that last year. But, like, you know what, kid, I probably think there is a future for you where you start for somebody for a little bit. Still, I think you're going to. I don't think you've started your last NFL game by any stretch. So
he does. He's starting to feel like a Matt Schaub story, maybe, you know, one of those guys who you're like, yeah, in a couple of years, the Bears are going to get something for this guy when they trade him. You know, like he doesn't seem like the type who's just going to sit behind Caleb for the rest of his career, which is unfortunate because he is a very solid backup quarterback. And no, I don't think he has any kind of significant future as a starter in the NFL, but he's absolutely a guy who's going to get an opportunity to try. If Gardner Minshew is getting his opportunity, there's no reason Tyson Bajent shouldn't get his. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of bittersweet. Like, you see a guy succeeding this well, you know, he's going to have like his Matt Flynn opportunity, right? He's going to come in for two games, blow the doors off some shit defense. And then the Bears are going to see dollar signs in their eyes. Like, oh, that's like a third round pick right there. All of a sudden for Tyson Bajent, you know, and we didn't spend anything to get this kid. So, you know, more power to him. I'm not looking forward to losing him as a backup quarterback, but I kind of am, you know, at that point, right? If we're going to get something for him. But yeah, I mean, he is, he also just has that look, right? He has that quarterback vibe that traps GMs. He's tall. He's got the hair. Like, he just looks like a quarterback, right? So but I feel like that works in his favor.
But do you think he could beat Bo Nix in a backpack battle? Like, who's got... He doesn't know what I'm referring to. They were
Tyson gives me the idea that instead of a Bible in his backpack, he's got like a lube and a Playboy. Like he doesn't give me the idea that he's a good old boy with the Bible and the ball.
Yeah, no, it was the Broncos broadcast of their most recent preseason game was. I mean, the Bo Nix hype, obviously the local media is going to hype up their guy. That's fine. Yeah. But, like, it was almost nauseous. I laughed, first of all, when they showed, like, the list of, like, all-time completion percentage leaders in NCAA history with Bo Nix at the top. And then the next, like, three guys were, like, Colt McCoy, Kellen Moore, and Mac Jones. And then they also asterisked that Zach Wilson, who's also in the Broncos right now, was 10th on that list. And I was like, I feel like you guys are maybe undercutting the point you're trying to make with that graphic just by having that graphic.
Maybe you shouldn't have shown this list, you know?
I mean, JT O'Sullivan, he was breaking down Bo Nix's first preseason game when he was just like, yeah, I mean, hey, what do I know? I wasn't in college, you know, long enough to get a PhD, and I'm not the NCAA's all-time leading completion percentage leader. And by the way, here's how you do that. And it cuts, and it showed him turning down a post route downfield that very likely could have been a touchdown if he'd been able to throw it, to throw a check down into the flat for 2 yards. And he's like, that's how you do it, folks. That's how you get an 80% completion percentage, because he'll find a completion. If that's all you want, he'll do it. But yeah, they were talking about Bo Nix, and they were saying, you know, he met with Sean Payton, and he just regurgitated all the information they'd given him so quickly. Like, he memorized all the plays, and they were just so impressed. And Sean Payton was like, Bo, you seem like such a good kid, and you're memorizing all my plays. There must be something wrong with you, son. Why don't you turn out your backpack so I can see if you've got drugs in there or something? Which, do you think Sean Payton has ever told an honest story in his life? Like, I know. Jesus Christ.
But let's just say that I know people who exaggerate very well, and this is one of those people. Absolutely. It's him, Hayden Fry. There's another one who just never told an honest story in his goddamn life. Just cannot stop but adding flourishes to things, and that's absolutely what this is.
And then there's, yeah, and so he makes Bo Nix dump out his backpack, and all Bo Nix has in the backpack is a lacrosse ball, a football, and the Holy Bible. And that's when Sean Payton knew he'd found his quarterback. So
can you imagine a quarterback who is supposed to be the most mature dude in the draft, and what he's brought is two balls to play with and the fucking Bible, like he's actually going to read it? Like, I would look at him like, are you an infant? Like, who packed this bag? You didn't bring food? Like, what are you bringing? What are you going to do at these meetings? You think we don't have footballs? Like, this would drive me insane. But of course, for Sean Payton, he's just like, oh, I got an erection twice the size of normal looking at that backpack. I am so ready for the Broncos to start the goddamn season just so I can dunk on them. Like, I could not be more ready for the Broncos and Washington, quite frankly, to start playing real games. Do we have anything else to talk about? We've hit an hour.
No, I think we're good. Yeah, well, like I said, next, you know, last preseason game is probably not going to have a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Really, there's not even a ton of storylines about who's going to make the final 53. I feel like it's mostly pretty set at a couple spots, and I have a hard time caring about the few spots that it's not. Like, does wide receiver 6 on this roster really matter? Does RB4, like, I, you know. And I think they're still likely to make a move for an edge at some point. So even if, like, a Daniel Hardy makes it as DE5 or whatever, I wouldn't get too comfortable in that spot. Obviously, Austin Booker, I think, is a lock, not just for the roster, but for the game day roster at this point. But yeah, there's not a whole lot to discuss there. So next week we'll probably try to do, you know, previews and predictions, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And our hopefully our special guest can come on. He doesn't even know he's going to be invited. Will he be here next week or not, folks? We're going to leave you with a tease. And then, yeah, for the season, it sounds like Eric's going to be joining us full time. And man, I'm ready. I am ready for the goddamn season to start. So, yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, later.
Way out that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.